One. Hello and welcome to a special golf edition of NJ Biz Conversations. I'm your host, Jeff Kanaij. My guest today is Kevin Moyer. He's a partner at accounting and tax advisory firm Sachs LLP, where he leads the firm's transaction advisory practice. Kevin, welcome back.
Happy to be here, Jeff. Thanks for inviting me back.
Yeah, thanks for coming back. I said golf. It's actually a golf M&A edition because the golf world has produced one of the most intriguing transactions to come along in quite a while, and that is the discussions between the PGA Tour, the DP World Tour, which used to be the European Tour, and LIV Golf, which is a new tour funded by Saudi Arabia's Sovereign Wealth Fund. And I wanted to start with the question of what exactly it is they're talking about, because if I recall correctly, at least back in the outset, the parties were reluctant to call it a merger of the three entities. Would you call it a merger? If not, what do you think they're talking about? What is it that might come out of these discussions?
Yeah, I think that's a great question, and probably a question that's been ever evolving. You know, when this started, and I'll go back to inception when LIV started to pick up momentum and steam and really started to almost target the players on the tour. You know, there was always the thought or thesis that, you know, these two organizations could never coexist, right? You know, one was competing with the other. You know, players were defecting, players were staying, you know, the players who were still on tour, you know, kind of said, listen, if it comes down to playing golf again or joining the LIV, I may just not play again. Okay. And I think what we're kind of seeing now is that the, you know, and this is kind of the evolution of the transaction or the proposed transaction is that the LIV, and kind of to your point, who's backing them, has an unlimited checkbook to an extent, right? So the ability for the PGA Tour to cross litigate with the LIV as it relates to whether it be stealing players, you know, rules changes, et cetera, is probably not of high likelihood. So I kind of feel what brought this, again, merger or partnership is the term I'm using.
Okay.
Partnership on is the fact that the PGA Tour realized they probably had one of two options. It's continue to lose great talent in the endorsements that come with it, or go through a very long, stale, you know, long-dated litigation, obviously, with LIV and a variety of topics. And okay. I really think that's what pushed Jay Monahan to, you know, kind of a little bit maybe secretly negotiate with the LIV, or at least that's how the players feel and felt, as it relates to potentially creating an alliance or a partnership, is again the term I'm using, to kind of revolutionize golf and come together cohesively. And I think that's still very much debated as to whether it will be cohesive, you know, is you've probably seen the news, a lot of rapid developments, even as early or as you know, late as yesterday evening, there's a very big development we could talk through. But, you know, I think overall, there's still a long way to go before this thing crosses the finish line.
Okay. I should just point out for our viewers, the reason NJ Biz is talking about this is that there is a LIV Golf or LIV Golf event coming up August 11th in Bedminster. They played there last year as well. Henrik Stenson won. So there have been PGA Tour events in New Jersey in the past as well, and likely will be in the future. So it is a part of the business world here in New Jersey. Getting then to the sort of initial conflict between the Saudi group and the PGA Tour. Obviously, the Saudis were throwing around a lot of money, signed up a lot of the biggest stars. That kind of prompted things to get moving, but it also raised some regulatory concerns. if as you say, there's a, you know, there these two large entities would get together. It sounds like the antitrust authorities are looking at that, first of all, and Congress is also looking at it. Let's start with on the regulatory side. What is the regulatory objection as you see it?
Yeah, I think it's a few things, you know, and good call out as well when you think of Congress and testimonies that have gone before them. You know, I think the first maybe material issue that's going on is there's a lot of journalists and maybe otherwise, and I tend to agree, kind of, you know, stating that the Saudi Arabian fund that's who's backing LIV effectively sports washing, right? You know, it's much more of a reputational kind of cleansing. And the way they're doing that is kind of pumping money into the game of golf and recruiting, you know, traditionally tour players to join them to kind of boost their reputation. So I think that may not be a true regulatory issue, but I think that's a fundamental issue that many people have, you know, and I think we've seen that in protests. You know, there very well could be protests in New Jersey when LIV arrives, like there was historically. Mm-hmm. So I think that maybe that's number one. Then you think of antitrust, right? You think of these two very large, very significant. One is, or NewCo is allegedly going to be for profit. You know, the tour has historically been nonprofit. Right. LIV is, as you mentioned as well, has been just throwing just millions of dollars to these players to kind of get them to jump ship. And these are mainly by way of sign-on bonuses or guaranteed payments, right?
Right.
You know, and when you think about competing, the PGA Tour, if you look at historical purses or, you know, first place prizes, or nowhere near kind of what LIV is offering, right? So then you have that thesis. It, from a PGA Tour perspective, are they going to get squeezed out as well if they don't kind of, you know, play in the sandbox with the LIV by way of just they can't compete from a, you know, player compensation perspective? Going a little bit even beyond regulatory, there's been some rumors about maybe some heavily endorsed, you know, professional golfers losing their endorsements or who have lost their endorsements as a result of kind of, as they say, defecting to the LIV. So it's going to be interesting as this evolves and these become effectively one entity, what that ends up doing to some of the major endorsement bodies that are out there, right? You know, they all have their own set of values, their own kind of vision, mission statement. Will they be able to coexist, you know, endorsing an athlete that historically maybe they wouldn't if they would have joined the LIV independently versus now kind of this merged new co or this merged new alliance where now LIV is obviously going to be a significant part of it?
Okay. And you mentioned the Saudis and sports washing. That seemed to raise a lot of hackles, especially in Congress. There was talk, and you mentioned the PGA Tour is a nonprofit, which gives them a tax advantage. There was talk in Congress of maybe removing that if this deal somehow goes through. Mm-hmm. How likely is that? How big a threat would that be for whatever entity finally results?
You know, I think very real, right? I think that the new entity, if you will, is likely going to be a for-profit. You know, I think that some of the concern that maybe Congress had, it rightfully so, is not really being able to trace back, not so much where the money originated, I think that's very well known, but kind of where it ended up, right? You know, a lot of this was done, and a lot of the issues the players have currently is that there hasn't been really any transparency from the PGA independent directors. So as you may have seen yesterday, very, very big movement in this whole thing. The players took control of the board by way of appointing Tiger Woods, right, is the sixth individual to join that board, kind of outnumbering the independent directors 6-5 now. So they have, you know, as it stands today, kind of the swing vote is to what the destiny of this is going to be. I know that Tiger released a statement really evidencing in capital letters the word tour, I believe 5 or 6 right. times, because I believe that's how he sees it. So when you think of, you know, one of the issues they're speaking about is the players who did not defect, who stayed with the tour, should they be compensated for that, right? That's one big item of discussion that I know was recently mentioned in press, kind of as well as transparency. I mean, Jay, who obviously, you know, runs the PGA Tour for all intents and purposes, has not really been, from what I could derive, very transparent with the players. And there's, you know, very, very significant evidence of that when he went on medical leave, came back from medical leave and, you know, some other items that took place, that was he dealing kind of secretly behind the scenes? And that really rubbed the players the wrong way. Right. So, you know, I think inevitably what I kind of foresee coming out of this is now that the board is tilted, now that the players have taken control, you know, at least from a 6-5 perspective to independent directors, this deal and the trajectory of this deal could change dramatically very quickly, right? Because now they're in the driver's seat. And this is the first time that I could reflect back on during this whole discussion where they've truly had some sense of control, you know, as it relates to what the future of golf looks like, right, as we know it.
Right. Okay. And we should mention Tiger Woods was not one of the defectors to Live Golf. He stayed with the PGA Tour. And there were other PGA Tour players. Rory McIlroy comes immediately to mind, who have been who have been very critical of this players who have gone over in the way the way the PGA has responded to it. So I'm curious whether you think there is a structure that they could come up with that would satisfy all of the constituencies here, the regulators, Congress, the tour players, the players of the who remain loyal to the PGA Tour, and then the ones that, as you say, defected, for lack of a better word, to Live Golf. Is there something that they can do to make everybody happy?
You know, it's a great question. One I've actually thought quite a bit about. You know, when you think about making everybody happy, right? When you think of the legal entity structure of how this all looks, I mean, is that achievable? In my opinion, absolutely, right? I'm sure that, you know, the attorneys involved, the advisors involved, et cetera, could create a structure that's mutually beneficial from a compensation tax, et cetera, perspective for both the NUCO or the alliance, as well as the players. What I struggle with, though, is if this goes through, what is that going to do to the fan base of golf? Because beyond the players, there's a large fan base who is not in favor of this. So when you start thinking through, you know, the fans or the consumers who stop buying the products of the golfers who are endorsed, you know, as a result of this, what does that do kind of more macro level to the game of golf, right? You know, are we going to see maybe a downturn in people attending these now new alliance events? You know, are we going to see a downturn in purchasing of apparel, right? Are we going to see more athletes losing endorsements because just the golfing community is saying, listen, we don't believe in this. We kind of see what's going on behind the scenes. And, you know, it's evidently clear to us why this is maybe taking place. And, you know, we just can't get on board with it. So, you know, I think that the greater concern for me isn't so much maybe the tactical structuring of the transaction, because I do think that's something they could very well maybe think through and devise. But okay, it's beyond that. It's the effect that it has on the game of golf and those who obviously, you know, pay for the tickets, pay for the hats, pay for the golf clubs of the sponsored athletes who, you know, in many cases when they did defect to LIV, you know, were not supportive from what I could see. Of those athletes, right? They felt that they kind of slightly sold out. You know, there's golfers who said, listen, if I would have stayed on tour, there is no way I could have made the money that I made by you know, obviously joining the LIV. And I think that, you know, I see the practical side of that. I mean, I'd be lying if I said I didn't. But at the same time, a lot of these golfers, these large name golfers, have very, very dedicated, very loyal fan bases, no different than large, you know, Major League Baseball players, NBA players. It's very much the same. And unlike maybe following a player from team to team in the MLB or the NBA, I don't see as much of that when you think of the trajectory of the PGA to the LIV.
Okay. Now, and obviously LIV is throwing a lot of money, and it's a lot of guaranteed money. Whereas, yes, you know, the guaranteed money for a PGA Tour player comes from his endorsements.
Correct.
You know, because as anyone who's watched a golf tournament knows that they're basically human billboards walking around.
Correct.
Does LIV have enough money to essentially satisfy all those people, or will it not matter to the companies who are sponsors if there's this one entity and everybody's a part of it? I mean, what difference does it make at that point if there's no sort of difference between the Saudi side and the PGA side?
You know, I would say that from my understanding of the sovereign wealth fund that's obviously behind the LIV, you know, there's always the comments of they have blank check level money, right? Meaning that they could write checks, you know, well in excess of what many other even sovereign wealth funds for that matter, or other maybe foreign investors can do, coupled with the fact that they're very kind of, I would say, 10 toes down in making LIV successful, right? So they have capital and they have motivation. Do I think that the sponsor or the company sponsoring the athletes will be amenable to, you know, maybe larger checks to keep their sponsorship in place? Absolutely. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's undoubted that's the case. But again, you need the end consumer purchasing that product to really earn anything, obviously, on that product or that endorsement. So I think that's where the disconnect may happen, is that the LIV, I do think has the capital. I do think they have the intent. You know, I think the PGA Tour does as well, but will the fan base stick around long enough to really see that through? And I think that's where maybe the confusion or the not so fast from the likes of Tiger Woods and your call out Rory McIlroy is you know, kind of heading. I mean, they view golf as a very pure game, as do many. And, you know, in many cases, this is almost viewing is taking a little bit of that purity away from the sport.
Right. Okay. Now, you mentioned Tiger Woods joining the board. There was another development on the board a few weeks ago where Randall Stephenson, the former CEO of AT&T, resigned from the PGA Tour board over this very issue. Yeah. What was the significance of that at the time? It obviously became much more significant, as you say, when the players added Tiger to the board.
Correct.
But what was the significance of Randall Stephenson at that time resigning?
Well, you know, I think what it did from my perspective is it showed lack of faith. And listen, board members, as you know, they talk, they communicate, they speak. Right. And if he was feeling in that position, you know, I'm of high likelihood to believe that maybe one or two other board members currently are probably kind of sharing or mirroring that. You know, it did create the opening for, you know, Tiger to join, for them to kind of pursue the path of now the players, you know, tilting the board in their favor. But beyond that, I do think it showed maybe a lack of confidence from Jay's own people as it relates to should this deal proceed. Right. Again, there was recently an independent advisor appointed to represent the players to make sure that all documents and everything else from a transparency perspective were put into place. But you have to ask yourself, is it too little too late, right? You know, I know that the players now have control. Theoretically, they could block, you know, the alliance or partnership from going through. That's TBD. But I think a lot of it's going to come down to them asking themselves probably two fundamental questions. Number one is, we stuck around with the tour during all of this. We are large advocates, obviously, for the PGA Tour. Should we be compensated for that? And will we be compensated? Right. I think that's number one. Then number two, it goes back to, again, the purity of the game. I know it sounds very cliche and maybe elementary, but you know, a lot of these individuals who grew up playing the sport, a lot of the young kids now kind of growing up playing the sport as they evolve are going to be watching this closely. So you got to question, is this going to have a material effect on the game of golf, where you're going to see maybe even local golf courses losing money because people are just saying, you know, I just can't get behind the sport anymore. It's diluted the brand. And, you know, a lot of people it's interesting, a similar view, very short-lived, but a similar view when they rolled out the pitching clocks in the Major League Baseball this year, right, where they're timing the pitchers. Mm-hmm. Are you devaluing the game? Now, that was on a much less scale, but still, it was very notable, something that changed the game and may change the game to speed it up forever. So I think this is just that much larger of an impact. And, you know, the question is, you know, will this be something that a year from now will kind of blow over and everything will settle and be fine? Or is this kind of at the point where it's a make or break for the sport itself? And if this transaction goes through, that there's going to be a lot of turmoil to kind of navigate, you know, in the future.
Okay. Now, what do you think, what do you make of the way this all has developed? Before the sort of existence of the negotiations was announced, the parties had managed to keep it pretty much secret to the point where it's a surprise to everybody when they sprung it on the world. Since then, there's been a lot playing out in public. The Stevenson resignation, Tiger Woods, all of the players sort of chiming in on what they felt about it. One of the people involved, Ed Herlihy, he's on the PGA. Mm-hmm. Tour board, is also one of the most renowned M&A attorneys in the world. I can't imagine that he's ever been involved in anything like this. What do you make of the way that it's developing now, and how would that affect the way it's going to go from here on in?
You know, I've questioned, and I've tried to think through, you know, if I was in the position of negotiating with the LIV, kind of why would I not want the players' involvement, right? I mean, the players at the end of the day are the reason that the PGA Tour exists, right? So the fact, I guess, starting very early on that we all know that there's a lot of kind of secret, you know, backdoor negotiations, unbeknown to the players and to many extent to the board, right? I mean, this was very much kind of a one individual show who was setting this up, not getting the buy-in, even the level of buy-in. Should we even consider this, let alone should we start negotiating on structure and some other items? So I think that it got off to a very rocky start because I think it was mismanaged from day one, very, very much fumbled, you know, as it relates to the communication, as you mentioned. There was a press release, you know, we probably saw it the same time the players did in some cases, right? It wasn't like it was anything that they, I think, foresaw. And I think what that's created now is just a tremendous sense of doubt. So everything that's coming out now, I think, has been very much kind of bottled up over time. And now that, you know, that this has become public, people are actually paying attention to it and very heavily scrutinizing every single move that's made. Now, do I disagree with that? Probably not, because again, the transparency that in this type of arrangement probably should have been there, it wasn't. And, you know, again, do I think the attorneys, you know, can structure something that's amenable to all parties? I do. But again, I have to question what the ultimate impact is going to be on the sport and in the fan base that really supports the sport to continue, you know, what the PGA Tour has become.
Okay, well, as from a media perspective, I wish all merger negotiations took place in public so that we could see everything.
Agreed.
Before I let you go then, where do you see this going? How do you see this playing out let's say through the end of the year? I mean, the majors are all over. There is a Ryder Cup coming up. Yep. We have the live event in New Jersey next week. How do you see this going? How long do you think it might take before we get some sort of resolution about what happens here?
You know, it's if you were to ask me this question when the board was tilted the other way, I would say that, you know, unequivocally, this deal this arrangement alliance is going to go through. You know, as far as timing goes, there's a lot of legal back end that needs to happen. Still a lot, I think, as it relates to Congress, questions that need to be answered. But inevitably, I would say it's going to go through. It's just a matter of time. Now that the players, you know, kind of have the advantage, I'm a little bit on the line. I don't know. You know, Tiger Woods is one of the most, if not the most influential golfers that's existed, right? That's ever played this sport. And he is very, very, I think, straightforward based on his press release as to what he believes and kind of what he views. So between him, Rory, and the others kind of that make up now the player board, there could be a consensus that, you know, again, the integrity of golf and the sport, what they built, what they created is at jeopardy. And they may not, you know, push forward with this alliance. And I wouldn't be shocked if, you know, again, if it went through, but it may be a little bit rockier of a way to get there. And it may be a lot more, which it should be, in the favor of the players before it's ever to the point of creating, again, this mega alliance, if you will, that's going to inevitably change the game of golf.
Okay. Well, you know, Tiger was more than any other person responsible for building what we have. I mean, his fame, his ability was responsible for a huge spurt in growth in golf.
Absolutely.
Well, I hope you'll come back and when we finally see what this looks like, I hope you'll come back and tell us what you think about how it went.
I would love to do a post-mortem on this one. You know, I think that when it's all said and done, I do think there's still a lot that's going to be uncovered. I think there's probably a lot that's going to be reported on that maybe we're not privy to today. And again, I think it's With the favor now in the hands of the players, I think this is going to be much more interesting, if you will, as it relates to what, if this does go through, what that final kind of contract and structure looks like, right? Maybe a little bit different than it would have looked previously with the independent directors having control.
Okay. Well, we will talk again, to be continued, as they say.
Perfect.
Kevin Moyer, partner at Sachs, thank you very much for joining me today. I really appreciate you taking the time.
Thanks, Jeff. Really appreciate it.
And thank you all for watching. Until next time, stay safe, everyone.